Teresa Walker, Associated Press, at Teresa M. Walker on Twitter. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Did I hear that you're going on vacation?
I know it's March Madness, and I'm not supposed to, but, you know, guess what? After covering the SEC tournament, there's nothing in this state this week, NIT and things like that. Yes, I know Houston, Memphis is hosting tomorrow night and such, but nothing that requires my specific immediate attendance. So I'm escaping because, Greg, you know what's coming up next week? I'll be in Louisville for the South Regional, where I know Vol fans are hoping that the Tennessee shows up. And then also, right after that, shoot, before we know it, the NHL season will be over and the Preds will be in the postseason. So, and then, yeah, something called the NFL draft.
Yeah, draft's coming to town.
Nothing's going on in the next 2 weeks, so I'm going to escape and rest up.
Get away, atta girl. SEC tournament, let's just start with that yesterday. Auburn 84-64 win over the Vols, and certainly they left everything Saturday. I was joking earlier that after the game Saturday, I thought I saw a UT manager run out on the floor with a ladder. They were going to get ready to cut down the net Saturday, but they had nothing between the ears. They were emotionally spent for that game yesterday, and that's pretty obvious.
Oh, absolutely. Emotionally, and, you know, yes, they're kids, so you can quibble about the emotions, but let's face it, they were up for this game. They won 4 of the last 6 against Kentucky, and that comeback, guys, I wrote Tennessee off with 2:58 left when Kentucky was up 8. John Calipari said afterwards, we don't let those leads get away. Well, in this case, they did, because Tennessee stormed back with just an incredible comeback for the ages. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, yes, that taps the emotional tanks trying to come back out the next day. And let's not forget, they had the very late game on Friday night. And, you know, that's where that loss to Auburn really bit them, because maybe they could have had a couple hours extra rest, maybe. But Auburn was the team that played earlier in the day, and they were, even though they were playing their 4th game in 4 days, they were rested. So, yeah, that caught up to them, Greg. It was that simple. And credit Auburn. I mean, Bruce Pearl had that team ready to go yesterday. I mean, when they're shooting threes like that, and getting steals and turning the ball over, it's just tough to compete with that.
Yeah, and you know, and now, and this is the way I look at this Tennessee team. You know, people want to put that label, greatest UT team ever. Well, not so far, not yet. And now I think they have to get to the Elite Eight to at least match that season, the best finish ever. Because right now, whatever you like it or not, there's no championships. There's no regular season championship like last year. There's no tournament championship, and you had both of them within your grasp. and ironically, losing both of them to Auburn. And so let's see. This team down the stretch has been inconsistent. You had Admiral Schofield disappear for about a couple weeks. The guard play, when it's on, yes, but inconsistency at shooting the basketball. But when they're on now, and it's, this is all about matchups with this team. I think as much as any team, it's about matchups, because you look at Kentucky, they're a matchup problem for everybody else. But if a team can come in and match up on the perimeter and have a good inside depth, defensive depth there, that's the team that's going to be a problem for Tennessee.
No, absolutely, Greg. I mean, we saw it yesterday. You know, that was a complete – that. I mean, Auburn has now won 3 straight against Tennessee, and that kind of proves your point perfectly. I mean, this team is looking good, but – Schofield yesterday held to a season low 4 points. His previous low was 6, and that was at Tennessee, a game that, you know, let's face it, the Commodores were this close to pulling off that first and, you know, what might have been their only SEC win, except for that 4-point play late that kind of turned the tide and sent him into overtime. So the best thing for the ball, Lamonte Turner suddenly can shoot the ball again. I mean, that 3 that he hit against Kentucky, huge, huge shot. And yesterday he led them with 24 points. So, you know, it's good that he's got his stroke going again as they go into the NCAA tournament. Now they're going to be playing Colgate, a team that is 2-0 against the Vols. Of course, that last meeting was in the 60-61 season. So I think things have changed since then.
Teresa Walker with us, at Teresa M. Walker on Twitter, Associated Press. Good for Belmont, and I was reading and seeing some of the sound bites with Rick Byrd. Good for him and everything, and this is their eighth visit, but the seven previous times is the automatic winner, automatic berth, rather, from ASUN and now the OVC, and yet they got much more attention all week long as being one of those bubble in, bubble out, you know, their name always showed up. And actually, they got once upon a time, it used to be called a play-in game. Well, it's not a play-in game when you got the 11 seeds playing. The play-in game was when 16 played 17 to play one. Now, this is not a play-in game. It's a first round because they got 11 seeds. But Belmont ended up an 11 seed and Murray State a 12.
I know. It's impressive, and it shows the respect for the OVC at this point. And well done. I know that they were kind of celebrating last night. I mean, you know what that extra bid brings to the OVC? That means $1.7 million in extra money. That's why everyone was so happy, because if you're a mid-major trying to compete, you need the money. And, I think we all around here were hoping that they would get in, because why? Well, we've seen them. We've seen what they can do. We know the resume. You know, the people who are complaining around the country, sorry, they don't understand. They haven't seen what we've seen just this season and over the last few years. But, you know, it's funny, watching some of those shows last night, they were pretty quick to try and pick Belmont as a potential team to – I think it was Seth Davis who quickly picked them to not only beat Temple, but which would be their first NCAA tournament win, but also beat Maryland. So, buckle up. It's going to be a fun week of basketball. And for local folks, it starts tomorrow night about 8:10.
Yeah, you got to pull for the Bruins, no doubt about that. Get that first win that I think would be huge. That's really where the program is in its progression, is finally getting an NCAA tournament win. I had no qualms with the seed. I even, though, think that maybe I could have made an argument for Tennessee being the one ahead of Gonzaga because of their head-to-head on a neutral floor, number one. Of course, Tennessee's bad loss yesterday to an Auburn team that ended up being a 5 seed. People don't remember that Gonzaga in its championship game lost to St. Mary's, which was not an NCAA tournament team until it won the conference. So I would dare say Gonzaga's loss to St. Mary's is far more worse than Tennessee's loss to Auburn, but it was the optics of it being yesterday, national TV with a number one seed on the line. So I get it, but if you take everything in a vacuum, I don't know that Tennessee shouldn't have been a number one ahead of Gonzaga.
I would have put them one ahead of Gonzaga. You look at the seedings last night. They had them at like 5, in the NCAA seedings that they did. And it's like, if you've got them that close, seriously. But you know what? Their bracket isn't bad, Greg.
No. They
one thing is the opportunity. Now, of course, we remember last year, Sister Jean. My husband's been calling Loyola Chicago a beer league team for the entire year. Here's the thing. Admiral Schofield said yesterday, now they've got to go, get the big one. And that's what's lying ahead of them. And we'll see if they are capable and if they can.
Well, you got Virginia the 1, and then Purdue 3, Kansas State the 4. But you win your first two games, you are in – I guess they probably would have to end up playing Cincinnati and Columbus. But, it's not like Cincinnati – sure, that's a good, easy drive for them. But, Tennessee fans should get there easily as well. So I don't think that's a big advantage. But if they win their first two, they're in Louisville, which is geographically set up perfectly for Tennessee.
Oh, it absolutely is. Not just the beat writers are happy about these site locations for Tennessee. Let's not forget, there were talk about maybe putting them in the West or the Midwest and such. So to be in the South region with these two cities, it's a huge, huge opportunity. And, I'm curious. There was a lot of orange in that building yesterday, Greg. I'm just curious to see how many Tennessee fans, knowing what this season has been, knowing what the expectations were to try to get to the first Final Four in this program's history, were saving their money for this time of the year. Call it Kentucky-like. we'll see.
Yeah. Teresa Walker with us, at Teresa M. Walker on Twitter, Associated Press, Change Gears, NFL. I hadn't talked to you since free agency and the tampering period ended, but just running down the list, not only free agency, obviously the trade. Let's start with Steve Tannehill. I thought basically what you're doing, you're getting Ryan, what did I say, Steve Ryan? Not the South Carolina quarterback, the Texas A&M quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. In the long run, only $2 million on the hook, which is nothing for a backup. You know, if trading here, you give up your fourth next year, you give up your seventh this year, you get the sixth rounder back this year. I think it's a steal of someone, you know, when healthy, is a starting caliber quarterback in this league. So it's a major upgrade there.
Greg, major upgrade. And I think they were paying Blaine Gabbert $1.5 million. So for a minimal upgrade, you know, you've upgraded at that position. And, you know, yes, Tannehill's had injuries. But you would hope as a backup that you can keep him healthy. And if they find themselves in a position like this last year in the regular season finale, needing to win one game to advance, you got to feel pretty good about throwing out Ryan Tannehill. A lot better than, no offense, Blaine Gabbert, but Blaine Gabbert. Because, you know, let's not forget, yes, he was 2-1 as a starter with the Titans. But they had to go wildcat against the Texans. You know, he had that great drive late against Washington. But against the Colts, when it was all on the line, a chance to go 10-6 and get in the postseason, just could not match the arm of Andrew Luck. And Tannehill, you know, the only problem he's had in Miami is being healthy. He's been a very, you know, good quarterback when he's able to stay healthy. And, again, when you're backing up, it's a lot easier to keep those guys healthy and ready to go in. And you've got a guy who, while John Robinson Friday made it very clear, Marcus Mariota is the starting quarterback. Well, they've got to know what they've got to invest in Marcus after this season. And when you've got somebody like Tannehill, he can help push Marcus, and maybe that helps bring out that extra little something-something that helps him take the next step. Although, I will say this, getting Adam Humphries to be an extra target and guy with, you know, he would have led the team in catches and touchdown receptions last year, Greg. You've gone out there and given him some extra help. Roger Saffold going into the line in place of Quentin Spain. They've done some things to shore up their weaknesses and put Marcus Mariota in position to at least have the chance to show him what he can do.
Well, Roger Saffold, that one I think is perfect. I mean, you plug him right there, left guard. He can move outside. He can play all four positions outside of center and on the line and that. And you mentioned Humphries as well. And if a healthy Delanie Walker, just two more chain movers that they didn't have last year, quite frankly. And a lot of people are wondering about the 37-year-old Cameron Wake. This is only, what, his 10th year? He didn't start playing until he was, what, 26, 27 years old. And I'm liking him earlier this hour to a setup pitcher in baseball. That eighth inning guy to get you the closer. He's going to come in and pitch one inning, but he's valuable. It's called holding, or whatever it's called in baseball, holding the game for the save. But with him, he's going to play, what, 30, 35 snaps a game? He's a designated end rusher that they did not have last year. So, yeah, this year, you know, it's $10 million basically, the guaranteed. And, of course, the three-year $23 million, I don't even look at that. But I like it because he can come in and fill a need in certain situations. And so this team, you know, and people get hung up on where the money looks at right now. Maybe 10, 8, 7, 8 years ago, that might be a lot. But the cap this year is going to be, what, $188 million per team? So I like that pickup as a designated rusher.
Well, absolutely, Greg. And about the money, you know, guess what? People who were wondering why did the Titans give Josh Klein so much money last year, well, guess what? They cut him Friday, and that means they got out of that four-year deal after 1 year. So, yes, there's going to be some dead cap money and charges that hit them on the balance sheet. But this is the NFL. It's not Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL. You can walk away from a contract that doesn't look good. It's not great for the players. We'll see in a couple years when the CBA comes back up for negotiation how much they try to change that. But for right now, you know, if you're the Titans, you got to like the fact that John Robinson can look at what happened and say, you know what, this wasn't working. He did say that they talked to Klein about trying to maybe rework that a little bit. But when he said no, his right, they were able to say, okay, we got to move on.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is that John Robinson, a lot of GMs would let him linger here another year to admit and not admit that they had made a mistake. Obviously, John Robinson cuts the losses, and hey, you know, in this business, you're going to miss on one. How you handle it once you missed on one, I think, is even as important as getting the right one to begin with. So I like that fact. Hey, he looked at that, he cut him. Hey, I blew it on that one, basically.
Absolutely, and you're right, Greg. We've seen GMs do that, and all that does is, you know, it may protect an ego. It certainly doesn't protect your bottom line.
No, and cut your losses, man. This is a results league. Teresa, enjoy your vacation. We'll talk to you next Monday morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Teresa Walker every Monday morning with us at 10:25. Hey, we're